We can send in one man. One man with one very specific order. To get Emily Warnock out.
Who?
I'd rather castrate myself with blunt rocks.
Guys will come and get you. Okay? This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. This is episode 162. My name is Scott Johnson, and joining me tonight, Brian Neck Collar Bomb Dunaway.
Oh, that did hurt. Mm. All right. Now, the next part is very important. The French are going to take you, Emily. Stay focused, baby. This is key. You have 60, maybe 90 minutes. Very important minutes. Leave your personal communication device on the floor. Concentrate. Shout out everything you see about them. Hair color, eye color, tall, short, Irish. Anything you see. You understand? Also, penal area.
I forgot that girl was in Taken. Right. Also with us, Randy, is that your friend back there in the chipper then, Jordan?
Sorry, didn't expect that. Aloha, Scott. Brian. This week, I spent about 45 hours at work. I spent about 45 hours sleeping. I spent about 45 hours cooking, eating, cleaning, bathing, relaxing, being entertained, and communicating with friends and family. And I spent all the other hours, every last one of them, wondering why, when the time comes for one man to go to Space Prison Riot and save the girl, would we choose a convicted criminal? Why was no one else available? I mean, there wasn't a second-tier MMA fighter from Chico who spent a couple of years in the army and still knows how to shoot a gun. Oh, it's because this particular criminal is zany, isn't it? So zany is our criteria? Fine. Brian Dunaway, you're next in line to save the world.
Perfect. Right. Zany. I like that. Zany. It's a good term. And then finally with us, Mr. Brian Little Transmission Fairy Zibbit.
Hi there, Jerry Trafalgar here, and I'm working on your design for the new maximum security space prison. Yeah, okay, great. I'm looking over your schematics for the prison. I have a couple questions. First off, you sure you want to make a whole bunch of doors operable with just a guard's handprint? Okay, good. All right, just one check. And all this, all these designs you've got for the heavy weaponry. Yeah, no, I see that. But are you sure you want me to install it on the outside?
Yeah, what the hell, man? That didn't even occur to me until you just said it. What good was that doing anybody at a prison?
Well, in case somebody with a great space travel, you know, with the readily available spaceships decides they want to come break their friend out of prison, then in that case, those things will come in really handy.
That's ridiculous. Right. Yeah, it's completely ridiculous.
That and the space station. Well, this wasn't the space station. The penal area. Yeah. That was plummeting from the sky.
Yeah,
because they killed the one dude.
Yeah,
the one dude who kept it in orbit.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that was pretty good. All right. Well, we're talking about the 2012 lockout, not lockdown. We've seen that too.
Right.
That was Sylvester Stallone doing his thing, trying to get out of prison. Lockout came out last year. The Guy Pearce, the Maggie Grace, the Vincent Reagan. I don't know who that is. Yeah, I guess he's the main bad guy, I suppose. Or is he the... I don't know who he is.
He's the main bad guy. He's the older brother.
Well, he's not the
one that tried to help get George's Frogger across the street in Seinfeld, is he? It's not him. It's not the guy in the chipper. That's not his name.
No. That's Jerry Stormare.
Your silence at my reference for Frogger on that episode is stunning to me. Nobody knows.
Peter Stormare, sorry.
You know... It's been 15 years since Seinfeld went off the air, and
I'm living in the past.
Yeah, it's fading on us, dude.
All right, fine. The one that got attacked by all the tiny dinosaurs in Lost World, the second.
That's a little better.
A little closer to home. All right. Yeah. The cosmonaut in Armageddon up there.
Very good. Okay. That's Peter Stormare. Yep.
All right. He gave Tom Cruise his new eyeballs in by Minority Report.
Yes.
God.
You could. Peter Stormare is like the perfect thing for film sack. If we like could pick a person and just watch all of their movies. Mm-hmm. He's right. Perfect. Minority Report.
Love him.
Bad Boys 2.
Fargo. Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, if you've got to watch a futuristic prison sci-fi weirdo stasis
if you watch
movie,
only one futuristic psycho prison movie this year.
Right. If you gotta choose between this and Minority Report, watch this.
Oh wow.
Every time.
No one's Team Dunaway today, right? You can't do that.
I've only ever seen Minority Report the one time.
Yeah.
That's all the torture that I ask of you.
Puke stick.
Don't ever watch it again.
That was like in the theater. And I have allowed my partner, Brian Dunaway, to convince me over the years. It's been years. I feel like he's spent the last decade of my life convincing me that movie was shite. And it's sunk in. It really has.
Yeah,
like,
you think it's worse than it is. I promise you that. You think it's way worse than it actually is.
Effort is working.
Listen, may all your puke sticks be whatever. But here's what I would say. I would say that guy makes everything he's in better. I would point directly to the not great, but at least first season okay show, Prison Break, where he played a Russian inmate. He was kind of a mob kingpin on the outside.
We're still talking about Peter Stormare.
Still Peter Stormare. And he was fan-freaking-tastic in that show. And he's one of those guys on the list I have of the things I'll always see if these people are in them rules.
Really?
Yeah, wow, I like him.
Because he's
like
been in some real crap.
Terrible.
He doesn't look like he's...
Yeah, I was going to say, his agent is... yeah, all right, sure, he'll be in that for you. Yeah, what accent do you need him to do? Sure, he can do that accent.
He can do that. It's not a problem. He needs a goatee? No problem.
Do you know what a Slovenian accent sounds like? No, he's perfect for you. Come on, perfect. He'll be there.
Why? His agent has a bizarre accent himself.
Yeah, and it got worse as it went.
Right.
I liked it, though. I liked it.
His Jewish, his Jewish agent.
Don't go change it.
Oh, all right.
Don't
Jewish Asian. Thanks.
Perfect. Good.
Agent. Oh, Asian.
No, Jewish Asian. Stick
Jewish
with that.
Jewish Asian agent.
Please stick with Jewish Asian.
All right. Well, cool. Scott Fletcher's knocking on this window over here telling me he has something to say about this movie. I'm going to let him in and let him do what he has to do, and then he'll leave again. Here it is.
Lockout. A former government agent wrongly accused of a crime gets a shot at freedom if he can engineer a high-risk mission to outer space in order to rescue the president's daughter from a prison where the inmates are in control.
That sounds so dumb on the face of it.
Yeah, it is.
But it sounds a lot better if you put a ukulele track under it.
I agree.
How it sounds so much better.
Come on, Fletcher. Where you at? Where's my ukulele at this time?
this movie is definitely... first of all, it's a French movie.
Didn't
know that.
That's sort of kind of.
Luc Besson didn't direct but produced it, Mr. Fifth Element himself. But a lot of these names in there are like Eastern European bloc names. Like if you go through that credits list, it is a weird.
That's because it was not filmed in the U.S. It was not filmed in Hollywood.
If you go through the actors, though, and I always like to say where the actors from, they're all from Great Britain. This is a British film.
Yeah, there's a fair number of them from Great Britain. There's a bunch of these weird, like you said, Slovakian. You mentioned that before, but that's the kind of names I'm seeing in some of the credits. Some of the producer credits and some of the weirder behind the scenes credits are all over the place. There's a lot of South American connections to this, apparently, in terms of where the money came from and who produced what.
Right.
It's weird. Because everybody told me this is the movie they had the most fun with in 2012 and that it was just a big blast and it should have been as fun as it was. And it was like Die Hard in space. And these are all things that sound good to me, right? Like, all that stuff sounds great. So I meant to see it, never did. It hit Netflix, appears to be there forever. I don't think they're going
taking
away.
Taking up permanent residence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not the kind of movie you have to fight to keep, I guess. And you know what? I mean, right on the top here, I'll just say I didn't hate it. I kind of had some fun with it. I think it thought it was more fun than it actually is. It's like your friend at the party who's so drunk and out of his mind, and he is 100% sure he is the life of the party. And you're like, yeah, he's all right, but after a while, you kind of want him to leave. You know?
Are you with me that Guy Pearce gets the credit here?
Oh yeah, he's great.
Oh, yeah,
he's amazing.
He's a hoot. Like,
absolutely.
The script is horrible for him, and he makes the best of it through physical comedy.
Yeah.
In a way I never expected from this film.
Yeah. Right. Also, well,
he's good with delivery, like line delivery, I think, when he's, you know, the quips and the little the funny lines that they're giving him. He's really good with the delivery, more than you think he would be. And I guess you don't really see him in a lot of comedies.
No, yeah. Well, and when you do, there are more arty and independent-y filmy thingies, and you know, it's the Queen of the Desert deal, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert thing, and stuff like that. But
Memento.
Occasionally, he'll show up in weird places. I would call this one of those weird places. I feel like it's out of the norm for him.
Right.
Like when you hear his voice on Finding Nemo or something else like that, you're like, "Wow, what's he doing messing around over here?" Because normally, he'll go back to something where he's really straight up, kind of hardcore. But then again, we'll get to it later, but he was just in the Iron Man 3.
Yep.
Busy little bee, this Guy Pierce, man with the worst first name ever. Guy.
This guy.
But also, okay, so I was going to say, you got to put him on that short list of actors from other parts of the world, specifically Australia. They seem to have this down. They do not have a hard time getting an American accent down. It is 100% convincing to us. To our ears, we do not, there is no... Obi-Wan Kenobi, what's his name? Ewan McGregor problem here at all.
Right. Are we that easy to imitate?
Well, I mean, we're sort of derivative of all of them anyway. So maybe it is easier for them because we go over there and we bungle it. We don't know what we're doing. So every British person, every person from the UK.
To put some steaks. Where do you put... Where's the baldy?
See?
Right? Where's the bar?
Now, to me, that sounds really good, but to them, I'm sure it's the worst thing they've ever heard.
It sounded horrible. Are you kidding
me? Mad dinkum is what you guys say, right?
I actually felt like all of the non-American actors were pushing the accents. I could hear the effort being put in this film, but it's not... That's what kind of complaint is that, really?
Weren't you a little bit happy, or I don't know about the word happy, maybe, weren't you heartened to know that the future of Earth's, or at least the United States, prison penal system, shut up, Brian.
Penal area,
involves not a single black inmate and all, foreigners of some sort or another.
Oh yeah, all mostly foreigners.
There was not a single, I'm not kidding you, go back and look at the tape. Not a single black dude in the whole place. And I'm not saying they should be in there. None. Right. I looked, none. Find me a black man in any of the frames of this film that isn't the guy.
Oh, about to say Lenny James from Jericho, primary actor.
That's right, Jericho. He's also on the first season of he's part of that Walking Dead there.
Yep. Oh,
I would really like someone to isolate Scott saying, "Find me a black man just now." That was awesome.
Someone will do it. I know four or five people who are probably doing it as you just said that. So,
awesome.
But it's I just think it's an interesting take, and I actually really liked this when I came to the conclusion it was going to be basically a misfit punk, over tattooed, crazy, one eyed. Hard to understand Scottish guy.
Mm-hmm. Joseph Gillen Gilgan, that guy who played Hydell, the younger brother.
Yeah, looking like a dude who should be jumping in a toilet to retrieve his heroin.
he was awesome.
Yes, mm-hmm. he was great.
Really fun to watch. Hard to understand, but fun to watch that guy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Could not understand a word he was saying. I was so desperately seeking subtitles during a lot of parts he was talking, but I didn't care. His actions were hilarious.
How about this? That brings us to a trope. Sibling convicts, and older one is the wiser, almost sympathetic convict who you really feel for and is trying so hard to protect his sibling or his brother, who is just so out of control.
So this is from Dusk Till Dawn is what you're saying?
Yes, it's from everything. Yeah, but that Dusk Till Dawn example is a good one. But lots of times you see this in even actual prison things like... the little face-off this reminded me of. See, you've got the older brother, little brother thing going on in face-off. And even though by then he was already John Travolta at that point. But boy, that sounds weird unless you've seen that movie.
Right.
But anyway, I think that's a funny. I think I like that trope. It's a trope I actually kind of feel. It's like comfort food trope. I see it happen. I go, oh, okay, cool. This is clearly this dude, the older guy, is going to die. And the younger guy is going to not have any kind of parental figure at all.
Yeah, he's not going to have anything restraining him.
Yeah, now it isn't always that he's the one that kills his older sibling, though. That was a nice little twist or a twist.
That was nice. Yeah. I did like that.
It was nice. And did you guys get the impression through that, like that stabbing and all these other violent acts on this floating space prison, that we were definitely getting the edited for PG-13 version of this movie, and there was a whole lot more to be seen on the uncut version?
Right. Kind of. And I kind of expect that from films like this, you know, that they that there was another script that kind of that, like, you know, we're OK, now we're editing this thing and you feel like all the boobs go away. And you know what I mean? Like the real like blood gore stuff.
Right. Well, supposedly this exists an uncut, unrated version of this movie where you don't cut away to see the guy's head blow off from the collar.
The ring. Yeah, the cuff. The
I'm glad.
Or
I'm
lots glad. Of stuff that exists.
I think this makes it better. Yeah, I mean, because even the stabbing kind of reminded me of like The Village when Adrian Brody got real close and personal with Joaquin Phoenix and stabbed him ever so gently.
Hold on. He's the one with the hair lip, right?
Right. What, Adrian Brody?
No, the other one.
Oh.
He's the one with the big nose.
Brian knows what I'm doing. Yeah. I have this problem. I have to bring it up every time.
But yeah, I think less is definitely more in this case. I don't think I would have – I think – They almost lost me just for a minute. I was able to suspend a lot of my disbelief, except when he was on the motorcycle or the monocycle when he was running away.
That was early too.
That was very early on. Now I almost backed out then because I was like, ooh, that is some bad special effects.
Yeah.
What was the deal with that?
Dude, it was it was so bad. It was so right. We decided to insert a bunch of video game footage here that I can't help wondering if what they – like they had an original plan and something fell through.
Right.
And this was the backup scene.
Right.
It seemed like
– yeah, that's very – that actually sounds like it plausible enough to be true, you know?
It felt like they called Electronic Arts and said, look, we've got like $150,000 for you. And this is all we can pay.
Right.
Can you put a team – can you put those guys that are working on the Frostbite engine, can they come over here and make this look real dumb? Thanks. Yeah, that was pretty weird.
And it's funny.
And the rest of the movie didn't look like that, yeah.
Oh, you had all these great space scenes.
Mm-hmm. Those looked good. Those looked real good.
There was one other scene, and it was near the end when they do the free fall, and they end up, you know, they end up back on Earth.
Mm-hmm. Right. Earth where looks bad.
Right, there was. That's the bottom line. Earth looks like a bad video game.
Right. I forgot about that. Yeah, at the end. Yeah, at the end of God. I'm not supposed to laugh all that hard when that was happening, right? Because I was laughing my head off. Like, what are you guys doing?
What are you getting me here with this?
Like when they landed on the street and he barely got that chute open like 2 inches before. It's like a cartoon.
And you got to remember, this is like
2 hours of falling. And yet,
this movie comes out 3 years after the J.J. Abrams Star Trek. Where they did a fall from space to land on a drilling platform, right?
Yeah. Right,
which was amazing.
Yeah, it seemed really like, cool by that.
Couldn't you just go get the whatever they used to make those effects?
Yeah.
But I think they actually filmed this movie earlier. I think it was like filmed in 2010.
Oh, you think this is a delayed to theater deal like they have sometimes?
It was a little bit delayed.
Really? Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, James Mather, Stephen St. Ledger, these are the co-directors. Always makes you a little nervous when they're not brothers, right? Because if they're brothers, it's like, the Farrellys are at it again. Hilarity ensues. Right.
They have a special connection when it comes to filming, right?
Right.
Like they have a secret language. Yeah.
It's like, you guys, James Mather made the dumbest intro scene ever. Call Stephen St. Ledger in here and let's fix this up. That's what this went.
Stephen St. Ledger.
But they claim
James Mather. Hello, Stephen St. Ledger.
That's the funny thing. They have such British sounding names.
They totally do, yeah.
But everybody and the rest of the production crew are all like, what do you want? Where do you want me to put it? It's like all this like weird Eastern Bloc kind of stuff going on.
Right. Bjorgovic. Where's Bjorgovic? He's not in place for shoot.
Yeah, for shoot. Get out here for shoot. Stupid man. All right. So where do we land on Maggie Grace? How do we feel about her in these challenging times that we live in?
Let me start by asking, who among us has seen both Taken and Taken 2?
Me. Wait, I may have been the same movie.
I'm the holdout, apparently.
Brian Ibbett is the only one who hasn't seen both of Maggie Grace's biggest movies.
I didn't know we'd be talking about it.
Listen,
what do you know?
Listen, Brian, I feel pretty safe in telling you if you've seen Taken.
Right.
You've seen Taken 2.
No. No. Okay, maybe.
Set of skills, which I'll use again.
I'll use it again 2 years from now.
No, he doesn't sound like that. But
listen here.
No, what are you?
I've lost the keys to the Lotus, right?
Taken 2 was actually better.
Really?
Because, kind of.
You have no idea what's going to happen?
kind of the way that there were certain things, not the whole movie, but there were certain things about Hangover 2 that were better because you were able to sort of crib all of the stuff that was a remake.
Right.
Okay. You know, like, I know what's coming here. This is a thing I've heard. So you're paying attention to some of the little, you know, the little things they're doing amongst themselves.
I don't know, man.
I felt like Taken 2 had better action.
Mm. Really? I feel like Taken 2 was like take your daughter to work day because he was pretty much teaching her how to get herself out this time. Mm. It's like, yeah.
How to do well in a spy kidnapping situation.
Right. It's like the first time was just like she was all, you know, I can't do anything. I'm a little girl and I can't do anything. And this one, she was more like, you know, he kept telling her, this is what you got to do. You got to save me. You got to do this.
They got a cell phone connection for a lot of the movie and he's giving her instructions.
All right.
Well, I just added it to my Netflix DVD queue or my Blu-ray queue. Right. So if this comes up again, I'll be able to talk with you.
You'll be prepared.
When we all watch Taken 3 for Film Sack.
And they're actually working on that.
Shut up.
There's actually talks about
this time Liam Neeson gets taken.
You know what? I'm fine with all of that because for me it's the Fast Five stuff. I like it when a series of movies looks like they should never have made even two, yet they are gleefully prancing down the street with 3, 4, 5, and 6. I think and then they keep the same cast. I don't mean when they start to splinter off into direct DVD territory. I mean like aren't earnestly making a movie with Liam Neeson 4 or 5 times that is essentially the same plot. That's awesome.
Come on, man. Die Hard is that movie.
Yes, it is. Die Hard is that. Die Hard set the standard, dude.
Right.
They set the standard.
Because there shouldn't have been no way that there should have been a Die Hard 2. We should have all said, there's no way a cop will get caught up in a terrorist
attack.
Things
can happen to him twice. Exactly.
Right. They even made big jokes about it.
Yep.
For our Lost fanatics, I want to just repeat. Taken Maggie Grace's biggest film work. She was on Lost. She was Shannon. That was TV.
Yeah, that was TV.
She's been on some TV, some pretty good TV.
Lots
stuff.
Of TV. She was on this year's, what's that Kevin Bacon business there?
The following?
The first episode. Yeah.
She was on the pilot.
She came to an ugly end, but yeah.
Yes, she did. Yeah, it didn't last very long.
Which really kind of weirded me out. I thought that freaked me out because she's a big enough name and face that I thought that would have been hanging around for a while.
Good. That's well, that was the whole purpose probably was to throw you off your game.
Yeah, too bad the rest
Maggie
of the
Grace.
Season.
Well, she'll survive because she's Maggie. What the hell?
Too bad the rest of the season was a big pile of steaming.
Yeah. Well, I was really shocked when Kevin Bacon died in the second episode.
Yeah. Oh, look, Samuel L. Jackson knows all about sharks.
Yeah, of course. So,
certainly make it to the end of the film.
But Maggie Grace,
no way.
Maggie Grace also in another Iron Man connection, which we'll talk about those later. We don't have no Star Trek connections today. We have nothing but Iron Man connections in this film.
Awesome.
Yeah. But Maggie Grace, so what I was trying to get to was her attraction level, because we talk about leading ladies here on the show. You know, how is she in terms of, you know, what does she do for the men she's trying to, none of this is coming out right, but you know what I'm saying.
No, I agree.
Is she hot or not? All right.
Is she attractive or not? And I've got to go, every character she plays is the same whiny little
entitled.
Titled, exactly.
No, I disagree.
I think she is too. I think she plays the same character, but I do think she's attractive.
I think you're saying that because of how she was in this film.
She was that way in Lost. She was that way in
actually.
She was actually a little bit more about the I'm here to help the prisoners. Mm-hmm. But she was like she was definitely like that. And well, I don't know.
Even when she dyed her hair black, well, she didn't really dye it. They more like smeared poo in it. But but when she did that, you know, even that felt kind of like little rich girl.
By the way, the toilet water he mentioned that he made that out of was the cleanest ingredient he mentioned for that hair tonic.
Well, yeah, it's like motor oil, coffee. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, you know what this needs? It needs some coffee.
Yeah.
The motor oil and toilet water, just not getting the right consistency or color. Is there any coffee nearby?
So just to expand that a little bit further. So they she's, you know, on a space station where there's a riot going on in a prison, and he goes up to Guy Pearce, goes up to save her, right? And one of the very first things he does is he decides they need to be able to move around among the population without being instantly recognized. Ugh. So he says, "I've just mixed this stuff, right? All those right. ingredients right. that make no sense whatsoever." Any of us watching the film, because it really got me, did anyone think, oh, he's making hair color?
No.
Well, no.
I thought explosive.
Yeah, I did too.
Really?
Yeah, I did too. Funny. I thought we were going down like a what do you call it? What the hell's a guy named from TV? I can't think of it now. But anyway,
MacGyver.
Jeez.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Oh, he's hair MacGyver. And it's going to work this out. It's going to be awesome.
I hate that trope, though, where are the prisoners that dumb? She looked like a girl the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Right. She's not fooling anybody.
But at least she's not blonde.
Right.
Now she looks like Lori Petty. Okay, well, she can go through.
I mean, somehow it kind of worked for Dustin Hoffman and Tootsie, but I don't think any other movie really does this very well. You know what I mean? Like that whole change, or like she's the man.
The Clark Kent. Put on a pair of glasses. Wow, who's this guy? I don't know who this guy is.
Yeah, wow. Jeez, he just disappeared on you.
That is the worst thing. To this day. We all ignore it. The lawsuit's over. The Schusters got what they wanted. Everyone's happy. Movies are being made. No one will address the main problem I have with Superman, which is the glasses aren't enough to hide who it is. Wow. Anyway.
I mean, I'll tell you the biggest problem with this film for me was the fact that it's supposed to be based like 70 years in the future.
Oh, right. And yes, 2079 or something like that.
Right. And there are so many things in this movie that would not still be around and would totally have changed. And that just kind of like kept popping me out just a little bit every
like
once
what?
In a while.
Describe. Because before you do, one of the things I actually like about the movie
right.
and felt like it was one of its strongest points, excuse me, was that I like movies that are suddenly set in a future where a bunch of stuff about it is kind of shocking and new, and right. everyone's acting like it's normal everyday stuff. Nobody's going, oh, look where we are. Look what we have, what we're driving now. I hate movies that are so mm-hmm. all up into their future tech that they forget that people living in it aren't thinking of it that way at all. They're just trying to show, you know, they're trying to enhance our shock. But I felt like this movie was really good at saying, no, these are cops. Hey. Of course, we'd have a police station up in lower orbit. And, of course, it's just all normal. Calling all cars. Let's go.
Like LOPD.
I liked it. I liked that part. But tell me why that's a problem.
I thought it was pretty good. But it was like, you know, the cigarette thing and the Zippo lighters. And it felt like wasn't somebody using a cell phone at one point in time. Shouldn't be using some kind of, you know, personal communication device.
They look like a bunch of cheap walkie-talkies.
Yeah, and when she was in the hospital, she wasn't in like some kind of futuristic hospital. It was like the regular old hospital hookups and everything, and it didn't feel like 70 years in the future. Maybe if they had said, you know, 2025, I would go, okay,
yeah, that maybe. But then again, maybe they're trying to do that thing I don't like, which is they're trying
to
avoid
Minority
it.
Report went too far with it. I mean, people were using wooden balls and stuff.
Look, there was a reason behind that, because those are like fingernails. They're like fingerprints. Oh. And they're always different.
I remember what it was. Our Russian actor, he said, I'm going to come up there and do something with a Sherman tank. And I'm like, this is 70 years in the future.
But it was joking. I didn't really remember anything about it.
Well, that'd be like saying, I'm going to come up there and poke you with a jousting stick today. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know what it is.
That far out. Yeah, but it wouldn't make any sense. It'd be stupid. I'm going to come poke you with my jousting stick?
That's pretty good. I would have liked that line to be in this dumb film. I guess where I come down over on the fence of, is this good? Is this bad? Is this whatever? I'm still kind of torn, because there was a time during the first chunk, first half, where I was really kind of into it and like, this is fun. I'm having a ball here. And then there was this time about three quarters through that I went, I don't want to keep going back to the buffet table. I've had all you can give me here. This is one long set of quick takes, and it's fast and so ridiculous. And they're not spending any. So okay, so in Die Hard is the big analog, right? And I even wrote down some similarities here. In Die Hard, he cut his feet and he was all bloody. And this, she's the one that's got a wound and she's all bloody and it's slowing him down. So she's kind of taking that role. throng of bad guys that are getting killed off one by one. That's happening here. Creative deaths, deaths in elevator shafts, of course, that happens in both movies. Right. Main baddie has a brother he cares about, and Die Hard Amish guy has a brother he cared about. Right. Props and elevator door open with a machine gun, chatting by radio with black dude who's stuck in the other place, like all this stuff.
Wow.
Now
I didn't pick up on two-thirds of those. Yeah.
They kept just sticking their face out and I'm fine with that. Again, I like it as a basis, as a model for your film. I don't have a problem with that. Where I ran into trouble was Die Hard at least had attempts at meaningful, quiet moments where character could be fleshed out a little bit. People could give knowing looks at each other. They could slow down for 5 seconds. This
Die Hard wanted to be a story.
Yeah, this never slowed down, and it never wanted. It kind of had the pieces it needed to be one. It could have been one, but it never wanted to slow down long enough to experiment.
This film decided it really wanted to be a story in the very last minute. That was the most crushing minute as the movie goer. Because you're like, oh no. I didn't watch this whole action slide around in the corridors of a prison with guns thing. And now I'm there's a literal sunset. Oh my God.
Yeah, there was
a literal sunset.
And previous to that, with supposedly the big twist, the thing you kind of knew the whole time, but whatever. Yeah, right. This would be like finding out the TGIF guy on Die Hard was behind it all the whole time. But that all that kind of stuff just left me so high and dry because, again, there's story beats and story points that work if you do if you've done the sacrifice to get there, if you've done you've pulled your sleeves up and you said, we are going to establish a story. But this is the cheap sort of we only have one way out, and it's this quick little story smattering, and no one's going to have any emotional connection to any of this because we haven't talked about any of it previous to this. And every time they could have on the prison, they chose instead to go, look over here. Instead of like, don't pay attention to that character. Look at crazy one eye over there with a knife next to somebody's throat or whatever. So that's where it lost me. It had me all the way up through all that. And then I went, wait, they're really not going to, this is just really going to be paint by the numbers here on the action.
Right.
They're never really going to give me any character with anybody. And the only reason it kind of works with Snow, sorry, the voice in my head just said, "You know nothing, Jon Snow." It just popped into my head. his portrayal and just Guy Pearce's being funny made that kind of work for him. But then he was just Duke Nukem in the end,
right? And you know, for as far as sci-fi films go, this is pretty dang good. I thought it was pretty. I had a good ride. Mm-hmm. I kind of totally just when they started telling the story at the end, I just kind of like, yeah, whatever. I just kind of start tuning it out. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Well, I see you. Yeah, you got the code. I know.
Yeah.
Because you hadn't heard a lot of stuff about this film prior.
Right.
Like, oh, you have to go see Lockout. Oh, you have to get. You kind of go in there with these low expectations. And as a movie that you go in with low expectations into, it's actually pretty good.
Because you have absolutely no opinions. Like, lock.
Right.
What was it? Lockdown? Lockout?
Lockout.
Somewhere. Lock
it was like. What is this piece of crap? But they have you right away because that whole opening shot is just when Guy Pearce is just the greatest, getting hit, drops out of frame, comes back in with his cigarette all busted up. I mean,
really tropey though, and tropey in a good way.
Yeah, right. I agree.
That's what I'm getting at. Guy Pearce in this movie is the Bruce Willis in The Fifth Element. He's just he's just fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't help wishing throughout the film, because he kept going back to this, Guy Pearce is a fun sort of criminal.
Right. Much more fun than he was in Memento.
Right. Well, way more. Yeah. But I couldn't help thinking there's a point where he's got her to the escape pod. Right.
Right.
And everybody realizes there's only one seat. He's been sent on a suicide mission to get this woman to safety. He goes ahead and puts her on the pod. Now, as a viewer, I'm thinking, how awesome is this about to be?
Yeah.
She's going to leave. Please, woman.
Yeah, get out of here. Go.
She's going to, I should be saying to the script, please leave.
Yeah.
Right.
And then this is going to get bloody. Right?
Yeah.
Come on.
There's a 3-episode arc of NCIS you need to be on. Get off the ship.
Yeah. Yeah.
And get out of here. Let him do what he does.
But no, she stayed. She sent the escape pod empty?
Yeah, that was stupid.
Jerk.
Yeah.
Well, I thought we could save some of the prisoners. Well, we maybe could have saved one of them in that escape pod.
Well, there was a lot of things like that where they were like, so there kind of moments where she's like, right. Now I'm going to set the pod out there. Now you're going to learn your lesson. She did it again when she's having a conversation with him and the what's his name died from the freezing. Yeah. And she goes, no, you just sacrifice your friends along the way and gets up and storms out. And I'm like, she's not worth saving.
I really wanted to. I couldn't figure out if she was unintentionally annoying or if she was intentionally annoying written that way. Because I don't know if you noticed, but when she asked this question a million times, she kept saying, "Do you always ...
Yeah.
And so she asked him like that 10 times. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah. She got a little annoying after a while. I just think it was a missed opportunity. Also, just think it's funny that you like this movie more than Minority Report. That just boggles my mind.
Way better than mine.
How is that possible?
Tom Cruise versus
all right.
Guy Pierce.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look, Tom Cruise is whatever. You say what you want about his personal life and his craziness and all his other stuff. He is a crowd pleaser in the movies.
I did not laugh one time in Minority Report. Not one time. Guy Pierce wiggled his way into my heart with his funny nature.
His banter.
Okay.
His banter.
Right. I'll give you that. Like that is a
bad... I felt good after I watched that. I felt good and got up and laughed and said, that was fun.
You know,
after Minority Report, I was like,
if Ryan Reynolds wasn't already attached to the Deadpool franchise,
I'd be great.
Guy Pierce would be a great runner up for that.
Oh, right. He'd be
with
great.
This kind of swag.
Oh, there's still time. There's still time. Swap him out. I don't, my problem isn't with Ryan Reynolds so much as how they ruined him as Deadpool in that end of that Wolverine
X-Men,
movie.
Yes.
What the hell was going on there?
Just stick to romantic comedies.
You think so?
That and he did good Blade.
Ryan Reynolds and Sandra Bullock together.
Yeah, together again. In Two Guys in a Pizza Place Part 2.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing.
Not a thing.
Nothing. I like Ryan Reynolds.
He has been in some action movies, and he just hasn't quite gotten over the hump.
I thought Green Lantern was the perfect vehicle for him because that character is very similar.
Yeah, it wasn't very well done. The Green Lantern was the Daredevil of our current day movie going.
It was DC's Daredevil.
Yeah.
I guess some of the Joel Schumacher Batmans were DC's
true.
Daredevil.
That's true, but that definitely had that more of that vibe to it. But I feel like he's got a big career ahead of him. I know it's more comedy and action, but this new thing he's doing with Jeff, the freaking True Grit. What's
Harlan?
Wrong with it?
Chaos Theory.
Jeff Bridges. Jeez Louise. Flynn's Arcade. I'll name everything he's ever been in, but his name. All right. So anyway, Jeff Bridges and him. And Jeff Bridges basically is playing the True Grit character, which is just the weirdest thing. Right. He's some cowboy guy. But they're basically undead ghost police or whatever. You need to see the trailer. It looks like a combination of Men in Black combined with like Ghostbusters.
I thought Ryan Reynolds was really good in Blade 3. Yeah. I know you can judge Blade 3 all you want.
I love Blade 3. What are you talking about? I like all the Blade movies. Don't let no one talk smack about Blade.
I thought he did really good in Blade 3.
Yeah.
I saw this trailer the other day you're talking about. It's called RIPD.
That's the one. RIPD.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Rest in Peace Department or whatever. Right. It's a really dumb looking idea, but it looks like it's being handled well. At least
Rhode Island Police Department is going to be really excited.
So good.
But it's, they appear to be two hot ladies to everyone but themselves. So when they're out there questioning people, they look like two hotties, but they're not. And so there's a lot of Men in Black weirdness going
on.
But it's
not really
it really is. You need to see the trailer. You need to see the trailer. It's exactly what I'm saying. And Jeff Bridges is going all out with the like cowboy freaking weird thing, and it's got this Ghostbusters business feeling going on all the time, and a lot of really ridiculous looking violence where no one really gets hurt. It's hard to explain, but you need to see the trailer and just get a taste for it.
So because that's I thought I had seen the trailer, but I don't remember any of that.
Yeah,
I thought he was like an old marshal from the past brought in the future, like he was undead.
He is
brought back to life. Okay,
but he shows up like a hot blonde. He looks like some hot blonde to everybody else.
So it's kind of like got a Quantum Leap vibe to it.
Kind of, yeah. A little bit.
I can take my advance purchase tickets back. And
oh, not,
right.
It's not, oh boy. What is it? Quantum
Leap? Well, it says, oh boy.
Oh,
that's
oh boy.
What Quantum Leap says, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Boy. I just couldn't remember.
Anyway. Al, I look like a hot woman. Al?
You know what, Al?
Oh, this just in. Beep, 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 beep. Lockout. In the news, Lockout used every blue filter known to man to make this film.
Right.
Did you notice that? That was like they went to yeah. James Cameron's old warehouse and stole everything they could and said, hey, the whole thing, everything they used to film The Abyss is here. Let's take it and let's film everything in blue light. Good idea.
Love it.
I don't mind it,
though.
It
was good. I didn't. I thought it was. Okay. It looked good because this is a space movie, and that's acceptable.
Other than that video game intro chase, I didn't feel like any of this looked cheap.
No, it looked really good. I didn't understand the whole space shuttle thing. That was the other thing that I couldn't understand. Like, we just retired that thing. Why would we bring it back from the grave?
Yeah, and then put flippy wings on it, and
put flippy right. wings.
Yeah, and when they dock, a little hand comes out and grabs it by the
just
nose.
Just grabs it.
Yeah. Figured that out. Look, it's sci-fi. It was on Netflix, virtually free, if you consider what we pay and what we get out of Netflix. I really don't have that much to complain about. I think it's fine.
Did you capture the Wilhelm scream?
It was just so out of place, Wilhelm scream.
It was terrible, and it was early, too.
It was almost like they went like back in the editing room right before they did their final cut of the film. Right. Where can we put a Wilhelm scream? Those are always great. Oh, wow. Okay, so we have this spot where he knocks a guy off a curb, and the guy steps in the street inadvertently. Okay, put it there.
Yeah.
Like, makes no sense.
Yes, this is James Mather. Could you get Stephen St. Ledger on the phone? I believe we want a man falling and using that scream. It's what all the films have today.
Yeah, do you have a guy? The only guy we have looks like he's 7 feet tall in Arabic. Oh, no problem. It'll still work. It'll work.
Yeah, totally. By the way, I put a note in here. Quote, she was about as convincing as a man as I am as a woman.
Right.
By the way, if you've looked, just one last thing on Maggie Grace, since you did come back to her. She was in something in 2012 called, let me make sure I get the right name here, Hot Girl Fast Car Eating a Banana Short.
Oh, what? I don't know. I like that.
I'm in.
That sounds like something on Will Ferrell's video site.
I think that's what it was. Yeah, I'm looking at the description here, and it looks like
I'm afraid Maggie Grace, unless there's some stuff we haven't seen upcoming, I don't think she's going to have much of a career if she doesn't.
She's a little one note. She'll fit this thing that she does, but she's just it's just not that. I mean, you know, whatever.
It's a shame. She could totally do more.
Of course she could.
We'll see. Tina and I are starting to watch Californication, and I hear she's
naked
in the current season. I don't know if she's naked. Everybody's naked.
Isn't that the rule? You can't be on that show unless you're willing to take your clothes off.
There's been a lot of episodes. Yeah.
Welcome to the Californication thing. We're going to try you out today. Are you willing to be naked? Yes. Then you're in.
No? Oh, then you're down the hall. You're going to be on Veep.
There's no nudity on Veep, is there?
No.
It's nudity free? Okay.
It's nudity
She's in a TV movie coming up.
That's a rarity on HBO, I just want to mention. Nudity free doesn't exist really in any kind of practical conversation. You can even take things from where the source material had far less nudity, and HBO will still needs more nudity. It's like he's tasting the soup and he can't, there's none of salt in it.
We're doing a new adaptation of My Dinner with Andre, but with nudity.
Great. So we get Hank Azaria to reprise that role. I'm thinking of something else. Tuesday at Morgan's.
You want to think of Wallace Shawn.
Fantastic.
Inconceivable.
All right. I just saw him on a Star Trek episode. That's neither here nor there. I was going to say one last thing, and I wrote the landing was shit, but that wasn't what I was going to say. Oh, I know what I was going to say. This isn't probably the place for this, but I think it'd be fun. I don't know. I don't know when to do this. I'd love to have like an off the record podcast or some kind of round table where smart people like us and maybe others discuss the deeper conversation about how prisons would work in space. That's really interesting to me. Mm-hmm. This idea that the incarceration would happen there. We've now solved the problem of having prisons all littered around the country and falling apart and everything else. We've now, we've now put it far enough away from us. We don't have to think about them all the time. The bottom line I came down to was you're going to cryogenically freeze them for their term limit, well, let's say it's 1,000. Let's say it's 100 years. Because some people are like, 100 years or more because they got multiple counts and whatever. The really bad criminals. Why don't you just put them in a little, Bember Dick Fumblebutch kind of pod? Like Brian knows what I'm talking about because he saw the movie.
Right. I mean, it could be in a friggin' tough shed out there. It doesn't have to be in this big, elaborate space station that's just really there to store a bunch of frozen criminal bodies.
Or just shoot them out there. and let him go.
Put him attached.
Like Zod?
Have a what do you want to put him like attached kind of... to the last one? And then you.
You saw how that happened as Superman. You don't want to shoot your bad guys into space as mirror prison.
That seems safe, though. The mirror thing seems safe to me when they did that.
Yeah, how can that be? How can that end?
Because that the lucky timing on that, you guys, movies that were made a while ago were real dumb. Think about that. That Superman movie is so stupid because...
blowing up in a bomb.
Yeah,
right.
And it just happened that thing was swinging by the Earth right then.
And I love they're all like against the mirror in like a picture frame or something. Ah! Mm-hmm.
I suspect Zod will be handled so much better in this new film. I can be wrong, but they're going to still be people to complain, whatever. But
right.
Sure. Anyway, my point is, it's an interesting conversation. Don't you think the whole stasis idea and all that?
I like what you're talking about, an intellectual conversation about movies. I like that idea.
Yeah. And part of me gets inspired by it. I'll watch it and go, that's it, really, and it makes me start thinking about this. This movie did this for at least for a minute, where I was like, "Oh, this is interesting. What are the politics involved? When did we make that decision? How much did this cost? What are our moral obligations to the criminally insane?" Let's say
it's almost like a forecast without the predictions, just the discussion that happened after the predictions.
Right, we're filling in we're taking two hard, crusty Oreo ends and we're putting some goo in the middle.
Let's go back. Brian Ibbett has a great idea. Let's go back and do a new episode of a podcast for every existing episode of Forecast.
We'll
all get together and listen to the forecast and then podcast about that episode.
Do the discussion. Perfect. Yeah.
Get Tom to sign off on this.
Great idea. There you go.
Oh, do we need his approval? Yeah,
on everything we do.
Contractually obligated to make sure Tom Merritt approves.
Boy, I take a cake of shit without him signing it off. All right. I'm out of character now. Let's. You guys want to do some clips, maybe?
Some clips. I'd like to hear some clips. Let's do that.
All right. How about this one here? This is a little interrogation scene at the beginning of the movie. So here you go.
You're a real comedian, aren't you, Snow?
Well, I guess that's why they call it the punchline.
Oh, I cut the punch
and he gets punched.
Yeah, hard.
Yep.
That all was good.
Got punched, and then he gets punched again.
Oh, and then we didn't even talk about that particular. That's like the biggest trope ever, where you're just sure that dude from the chipper is going to be the bad guy in this, and he's got the sneaky thing, and it turns out he's okay. So I like to call it the Mission Impossible 3 connection here, because in Mission Impossible 3, you had Morpheus through the whole movie looking like he was up to no good.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Total misdirection.
They even allude to that, too, that, you know, where's he disappeared off to? And,
yeah.
I thought it was Emilio Estevez.
Right. Wait, what? Why would it be? I don't know what that is.
Because that was in Mission Impossible. Emilio Estevez appears in the first 5 minutes and then.
Right. Oh, I forgot he was in that movie. Completely forgot that.
Yeah.
For me, those movies started with two. The first one didn't really matter.
Oh, really?
Much,
yeah. I think the first one, you know, I mean, if you're not a fan of the original TV series, and I wasn't, not seeing it, not because I watched it and didn't like it, but because it was a little bit before my time, and you didn't have that whole thing, you know, that whole connection to the Peter Graves character, then I think Mission Impossible 1 wasn't that bad.
I thought it was pretty good. I had it on Laserdisc.
Martin Landau all up in that
Sony UMD version or the
no, I had the Laserdisc. True story.
Really,
it actually had a really good audio. You know, Star Wars really good audio and Mission Impossible really good audio.
That's what you want with your movies. Subpar video, but great audio.
Right.
That's what
great
you want.
Audio.
I totally understand. All right, here's the clip number two, and this is a funny joke at the beginning right here. And this is your only F-bomb in the movie. I kind of thought. When I heard this, I went, oh, we're going R, are we? This is starting early. Too early to have your one free F-bomb, right? But right. No, this is the last one. So here it is.
Who was the mystery man on the phone?
His name was
Really?
Yeah, he was Asian.
I wish you could just play the whole scene.
I do, too.
The whole scene was better than the rest of the movie, unfortunately. Yeah.
Great credits intro, like just a perfect place to do all that.
Yep. Cleverly done with the, you know, the head bobbing up and covering up the name each time they introduce one.
It does feel like a missed opportunity because you had him there. He was working. He was doing what he does, and he was really good. I wish they could have changed gears and said, you guys, we need to kind of wrap our movie around how good he's doing right now. Like this movie needs to step it up and catch up with what Guy Pearce is selling.
There were several things throughout the film that did that also, though. There are like several times where he stumbles into a room as he's doing something badass. Like... It wasn't like Pineapple Express bad in like his his physical abilities. Mm-hmm. And actually, I would like to see a Pineapple Express version of this film. But
that's a weird combination.
Really good.
Yeah.
Wow. But do you remember in Pineapple Express how every time there's any sort of action going on, they're falling down and
They're terrible. And they're the worst possible. Yeah,
that's what's so funny. And there's some of that here.
Right. Go ahead.
Oh, you're good.
No, when he jumps out that, because I'm right along with you. When he jumps out the window in the beginning and he's flying across and you think he's gonna bust through the glass window to the side and he's gonna keep on rolling and everything. Mm-hmm. No, they totally break that. He slaps it like a big old bird and he's like,
that was great. That was pretty good. What was that thing? What was that big turbine thing? They kept calling it a specific thing.
Yeah, it was a torsion control, yeah. Or something like that.
Thing which every prison needs. I really liked I liked the idea of that better than how it turned out. Mm-hmm, seemed a lot of they were really threading the needle in there.
That's a very, very big trope there, using the duck system to escape or to break into some place with the, and that's basically what you were doing. You know, right. you gotta get in through the torque system. You gotta get in there and everything. But it was a pretty cool scene.
I like it's like, all right, break the control panel so that the guy will die. But then somehow at the police station, they can override any of these systems and
but
turn it back on.
But they can't keep it from falling from the sky.
Yeah. Now, did that all – I assume that whole thing just – oh, it blew up. Never mind. I'm thinking if it actually did fall and it never did. Oh, I do like the suits that protect them from reentry that then fall away when you hit a button. That's cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah. I mean, that whole scene could have been so great, the whole falling to Earth thing. Mm-hmm. But my God, I mean, you could actually play the clip of them falling to Earth during the show, and it would be a little short clip.
You know who'd be good at that scene? J.J. Abrams would be good at that scene. He would be.
Yeah, if only he would have done something similar in another movie.
Yeah, it seems like he should have a couple of times, twice in a row, in fact. But he's really good. He's really good at still making ridiculously over-the-top action moments feel human in a weird way. And mm-hmm. these two directors, Flim Flam and Jibber Jab, did not do that.
It's Jibber Saint Jab.
Oh, sorry. Oh, the Saint Jabs. Oh.
Jibber Saint Jab. Yes, hello.
Yes, hello. He made on my father. Yes, that guy. All right, here it is. Maggie Grace is something of a mixed bag in this film. Oh, didn't play.
Mr. Bonds, isn't MS-1's true purpose to test the effects of deep space exploration on humans?
Am I just doing lines from Iron Man 1 where I was in the crowd asking questions? Brilliant.
Right.
She's not very good. She's okay.
Mr. Stark.
She looks good.
You know what she was really good in? Mm. A hot girl, fast car, eats a banana.
Yeah, I've heard all kinds of great things about that since you started the show today. Let's see. Here's the Wilhelm scream. All right.
Apparently, they had cryostasis Wilhelm.
I'm surprised there aren't more movie makers who refuse to do it. I would refuse to do it if I was making movies. I'd be so sick of it. It's like, all right, okay, we got it. It's funny.
It
Not
takes
anymore.
You right out of the film because you're like, oh, Wilhelm scream. Oh, what was happening again?
Yeah. Even Nick, 12-year-old Nick, hits me on the leg and says he's watching this with me. He goes, Dad, Wilhelm scream. I'm like. Great. When we permeated every generation, it's time to end it. Hitch a ride, man.
How do we get off the ship?
Easy. Hitch a ride, man.
Okay, and then I captured out.
Hitch a ride, man.
And I'll play that anytime I want.
Hitch a ride, man.
Good. Thank you.
Isn't that great? Is that your friend back there in the chipper then?
Hitch a ride, man.
All right.
Hitch a ride, man.
Shot me in the face.
What the heck accent is this?
Everything I watch drives me back to watching Fargo. I swear. Something about Fargo. All right. How about this one? I don't know what this one is.
You see the look on his face?
He was about to say something.
I bet you see someone like, ah!
God, this kind of stuff. He just killed me.
He was great.
He was really good.
That and, the button pushing. Oh, I probably couldn't capture
the audio. Oh, yeah, because that was all visual, but that was great.
It's hilarious.
And that was before you knew they were related, so. And there is always that moment in that trope where the other inmates can't understand why this guy isn't harder on the skinny, one-eyed guy. Like, why are you letting him live? And he looks someone in the eye and says, because he's my brother. They do that every time.
Yep.
You can't have that trope without it. It's a rule. All right, here's something about being a smartass.
What do you want me to do? Fly? I think I left my cape at home.
Oh, that's a terrible joke.
That's so cute. And, of course, yes, actually. That's exactly what they wanted him to do was fly.
As it turns out, yeah. All right, here's some snark.
Apparently, we should all be eating more corn.
About my father.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I made that other bit up.
Did he have a message for me?
Yes, you are adopted.
So, man, is there a more boring trope than the president's daughter?
No.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. No.
Like, I was yawning when I found out it was the president's daughter.
I got a question about that president's daughter thing. I don't like futures. Maybe, you know what? I know what this is, and I know it's a problem, and I know that I'm biased now. But after seeing The West Wing all the way through seasons 1 through 7.
Oh, I thought we were done.
I know. But having watched that entire thing, I now have an impression of what the White House should be like and what the Oval Office specifically should be like. And I don't just mean physically. I mean the sort of reverence for what's come before, the murals and paintings you keep up, what kind of rug is on the floor.
I saw this.
This kind of feel of, respect for the office. This kind of stuff permeates that entire series. So along comes any movie, and I don't care what it is. What was the one we saw a couple of weeks ago where Red was in the Situation Room all the time calling all the shots? What movie was that?
Deep Impact?
No.
No, it was...
Maybe it was Deep Impact.
Was it Deep Impact?
Was it Resident?
He was
Resident.
Yeah, Deep Impact.
Something like that. Anyway, point is, yeah, that's what it was. They don't have the same reverence for all of it. And so even in future Oval Office, I just feel like everything's gone kind of cyberpunk in there.
Exactly.
And I don't like it. It makes me feel uncomfortable. And I know this is just me, but it's an effect of watching a lot of that stuff.
Right. It's like you want your president in something that doesn't look like, you know, like an old arcade or like, you know,
like he's going to pop like back Trump. Lincoln's head and he's going to push a button and fly down the
right. I don't know
fire escape or something.
I don't know what it is why it bothers me this way, but even Iron Man 3, they do this with the president who's played by the able William Sadler, but there's still a thing in that movie of I don't trust any of you people. That you all look shady to me. And in this one, it's like, who's the Slovakian guy with a goatee? There's no way in hell he should be in the top reaches of the U.S. government. What's going on here?
Right.
I don't know. It's a weird problem I had throughout this film. And it just left me a little sour every time I'd see them. Like the president shows up on the space station, which, by the way, he would never do. Why would he ever go up there?
Right.
But he did.
Well, he wasn't the president anymore.
Yeah, he was. Oh, because they took it away because they got him up there, right?
Yeah. Because you could just do that. Right. Oh, well, I've already had Congress sign it. Well, then what? How did you...
But, yeah.
Right.
Jeez, it's only been like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
How did you?
Yeah. It bothered me. I don't like fake. The only fake president I like is Camacho. It's the only one I've ever really liked. Okay. Because you took
us. Wait.
Go ahead.
Because we started this with the whole president's daughter trope, and you just ended with your favorite president. So, best movie as far as you're concerned that has both the president and president's daughter. For whatever stupid reason,
movie.
And we're going around the table here.
The President's Daughter.
I'll jump in. Resident. Yeah, wasn't there one called The President's Daughter? Wasn't Resident Evil like? Wasn't there a not Resident Evil? What was it? There was one where
President Evil.
Resident Evil.
Evil Dead.
Was it a Mila Jovovich?
Yeah, that would be Resident Evil. But
well, she was in that, but I don't know if it's the same thing. But she was never the president's daughter.
I'm doing
though.
A search for it.
Look, this is funny. I'm a little surprised I'm having this much trouble thinking of one because I know it's an age old trope.
What I always think is like the first daughter when
Resident Evil
like,
4. There it is.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Wow, you've seen Resident Evil
4? Which is weird
because
I didn't think I'd seen Resident Evil 4.
I've seen all of them. They're great movies. It's a great series.
Some of them are fun. Some of them are hideous. They have an every other one problem like Star Trek does with those movies. First, third, and the latest are pretty good.
Right.
I didn't see Resident Evil 4.
I can't. Randy, give us one. I can't think of. I honestly can't think of any other.
I'm going to say Air Force One. I think that's real straightforward.
That's a good one.
That was one that I would think about.
Was she up there on the plane?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's so was the son, right?
That's the whole point is they capture the daughter and that's why he can't just...
And the wife.
He can't just refuse to act.
Right. Brian, that's the first lady. Come on now. Respect the office.
Aaron Harrison Ford.
I mean, Escape from L.A., which this movie's kind of a remake of.
Right.
Is the same thing.
Well, dude, they did it on West Wing and I know it's not a movie, but they did the same thing. You remember the whole Zoe's Been Taken arc that was like 3 episodes long and she was kidnapped by terrorists and John Goodman had to be president for like 3 days. It was great. It was awesome, actually. John Goodman never was fatter, never was better.
Never fatter, never funny.
He was really good. And he had a pug with him everywhere he went. He had a little pug.
Okay, forget the Resident Evil thing. Was there a 24 season that had the president's daughter?
Yes.
Yes.
Multiple times, I think. Yeah, I don't know why. Yeah. It's a trope, but maybe it's more of a TV trope. I don't know. All right. Here's a we're in space now moment.
Which way's north?
Okay. We're in space now, so it's not north. It's port, it's starboard.
I love that.
I did love that.
I like the little at the end. Little
yeah.
Right.
Here's the don't know the password tall creepy guy.
You don't know the password.
That guy's awesome.
He was pretty good. He
had that tattoo on his lips.
Oh, ooh, yeah, that's right. He had a skeleton tattoo on his lips.
Yeah, yeah. Best prisoner. We do have a best prisoner award. It's that guy.
Sure.
He won for that. And then finally, we always like a good yell on this show. This happened late in the game. It's a dude from Jericho. Take it away. What was that for? Do you got burned on the face or?
Burning my face with your cigarette.
Oh, it was a cigarette. Okay. I thought it was
a lighter.
I'm sorry. It was a Zippo. You're right. Because he was lighting it. And then he stuck the Zippo
on. But wasn't that the thing where they were talking about how they marked their.
They mark the traitors or something like
that.
Yeah.
Like if you squeal or whatever, you get marked.
Right. Because it's like, I have to go for 3 years. And I'm like, stasis for 3 years? That seems kind of excessive.
Mm. You know, all weekly podcasts have to end unless they're called The Instance. And this one, FilmSack, will someday end. And I would like for it to end with like 200 screams from 200 different movies.
We have top men on this right now. Top
I thought you men. Wanted to burn my face with a Zippo.
Yeah, we have top men on it. There is somebody who is doing this very thing. It's taking him forever. It's a ton of work. He keeps sending me updates on what's going on, but he's compiling every bad scream, every yell that we've ever covered on the show. So I'm not saying that that's, you know, a prediction of when we'll end. Like, it's not sooner than that. It's just it's there when we need it. All right, it's in the little red box with a code, and I gotta pull that
MP3
out.
It's in the back of the warehouse, stamped with a
Porkins told me there were top men. Right,
right.
Top men working on it. All right, that's it for those. Scott Fletcher said this,
durga, durga, durga.
Which has nothing to do with anything. So it's time for awards. All right, let's get to our awards. This is where we roll out the red carpet and give the following awards away to this film. The Snarky Snark Snark Mix Snarky Award goes to Guy Pearce. The She's the Man Award goes to Maggie Grace and her inability to look like a dude. And finally, the Prison Space Station Slammed into the International Space Station Where Dude from Fargo Was Cosmonaut in Armageddon Award. Ran away with it. But think about that. I want you to think about that connection. He was the cosmonaut from Russia who's been on the International Space Station by himself eating Cheetos for months and months and years. And it was that thing that the big space prison slammed into each other. And he's on the one going. To me, the connections were just too great.
Wow. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was really good. The soundtrack, I'm sorry, let's do Trek stuff. There is no Trek stuff. Ooh, no Star Trek
connection. Can I throw in one more award, though?
Yeah, they're in space, I guess. So there's their Star Trek connection. Go ahead with your award, yeah.
One last award. Best use of a Misfits actor that I'm going to see this weekend that's not going to make me all sad.
Oh, wait. What? Who? Oh, right. Got it. Right. Thank you. Forgot about that. Friends. Wait, who's in it, though? Misfits actors in this? Who?
Yeah, Joseph Gilgan is the little brother with the goofy eye and the...
I do.
He's on Misfits. He took over in the second or third season when the curly-headed kid left.
Oh, he's the new funny kid.
He's the new funny kid, right.
Okay, I've not watched The Funny Kid. That's why I don't recognize him. Yeah. I stopped. I'm nervous to go on because I feel like getting rid of all those guys was a mistake.
It was almost a hero's second season, but it wasn't quite that bad.
Not quite that bad.
Don't pick this gap.
Because the other Misfits actor is a bastard on Game of Thrones. Jeez.
That's why was the other part of my reference.
Terrible human being, that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. I don't like the guy much. He's torturing either. So whatever.
Well, yeah, that's true.
That's like
going to be that sad.
That's like a negative eating itself. It's weird.
That's right.
Okay. What else? Oh, yeah. Star Trek stuff. None. But we do have some Iron Man connections. Maggie Grace, Iron Man 1. You got your guy Pierce, Iron Man 3. He played a dude. Yeah.
He played a dude. Yeah. He starts out the movie playing Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
Right.
Really well, by the way. Great Val Kilmer impression. Wait. What other connections? There's some others, aren't there? There's some
early
other stuff.
Early Val Kilmer or late Val Kilmer?
Early
the Saint Val Kilmer.
Middle Val Kilmer. Okay. Yeah, not Saint and Val Kilmer. Also, but
because the Saint, don't you feel like the Saint was about the time that it was like a flare in the sky? You went, oh, I'm not sure if things are going to work out well after this.
Right.
That was what that was.
But I will watch The Saint any day of the week.
Would you really like that movie? Yes, it puts me to sleep.
That movie's coming on in 5 minutes. I'm spending the next 2 hours watching.
Puts me to sleep.
It's okay.
Wow.
It makes me tired. I've never really enjoyed it. I know what they were trying to do. I know what they wanted to be. I think there's a reason it never became like a franchise.
Right. That was okay.
Boring. But hey, whatever, man. Whatever toots your 2 hour horn on a Sunday afternoon, it's fine with me.
Toot, toot.
What else? There's one other connection. A 300 connection. One of the 300 was main bad guy.
Vincent Reagan. Yeah.
The older brother guy.
I know. I had to look it up to see what else I'd seen him in because he looked really familiar, but I couldn't place him.
Well, he looks hella like
the comedian from, what's his name?
But he also looks like the guy who was in 300, the main guy.
Gerard Butler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, saw that just a little while ago, just for the hell of it. Hold up.
You want to look at some abs?
300 is good. Except it's, it is weird. 300 is weird when you know that the whole time it's being narrated by Faramir from Lord of the Rings.
Right.
With his eye patch. It's weird. Just throwing that out there. All right. Wow. Let's get to the sound.
That guy was amazing.
Yeah, he was really good. No, he's great.
Awesome performance in that film.
It's just really weird. He's good in both films, I would argue. In fact, he is one. People don't give him enough credit for, I think, one of the most emotional performances in all of the Lords of the Rings films. Lords of the Rings.
Somebody help me. I need the name of this actor. It's driving me crazy.
Jimbo McGillicuddy III. Twice removed. All right. Here's the soundtrack grade. TM for too much. I didn't like it.
Really?
No, that was too much. Over the top. It was very video gamey. It didn't feel nuanced. It didn't match the rhythm of the movie sometimes.
I thought it hit pretty good sometimes.
Yeah, I'm going to argue with Scott Johnson that it was the best thing in the film.
Oh, I don't know.
It was a soundtrack that punched way over its weight.
See, okay. I always create a soundtrack on how much it how distracting it is from the film. And if I don't notice it, I feel like it's okay. If I notice it and it's, great, but if I notice it being distracting from the film, this one for me was just okay. I didn't even notice it.
It distracted the hell out of me.
For me, it was actually the first thing I noticed about the film. Oh, wow, this has a serious score.
Right. And it swelled. It swelled when it was supposed to. And, I thought it was hitting all the right notes.
Well, then we're going to have to agree to disagree. All right.
I'm going to keep doing that. It was orchestrated very well. Okay, so let's agree to disagree.
All right, we'll
I thought
that.
It was a good soundtrack.
Okay. Let's see here. Let's sum it up in a Twitter post. You guys take 140 characters worth of space and you sum up this film. Let's start with Randy.
Lockout, a straight-to-video masterpiece that tripped on its way to Netflix, fell into some theaters, and grossed a few million dollars despite being made of dung.
Whoa. went all blue at the end. Brian Dunaway.
Lockout, made me wish for a rated R Rain Man. Yeah, definitely F you. Yeah, F you. Yeah, 22 toothpicks. Also, penal area.
Yeah, penal area. Oh my God. Don't forget. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
Lockout. Guy Pierce is sent up to rescue the president's daughter in a maximum security space prison, a problem that could have easily been solved with an open every door and airlock button.
Yep. Psh. Totally.
Flush the prison. Let's not blow it up. Let's just flush it.
Also, don't hire that SS agent who snuck a gun in. That was the problem.
Yes, that is such a trope. That was Con Air all over again, man. I was going, no, don't do it.
He was like a forced chick in the bucket because he did a thing that should have been held to account, and he got to take the easy way out and shoot himself in the head. He is the number one reason we have this problem.
To save the president's daughter. He thought about this way too late. I mean, he was going to save her like maybe 30 seconds.
You know, that used to be the black guy dies first trope. Now it's the black guy lies first. Put that in your cheese and melt it. All right. Here's what I learned while you performed more edits per second than any film ever. Like a future. Let's see. Oh, I like a future where most hardened criminals are Scottish.
Yeah,
number two, shooting one of your door engineers will always help focus the guy who's next.
That was actually pretty good.
It was all right.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It showed you he meant business.
Yeah, he meant some business. I'd trade a little blood and guts for a close-up of that engineered dude's pee. So give me a little more blood and guts, a little less yellow pee coming out of engineer pants. And then finally, I see you, I foresee you.
Right. Oh. She got it right the first time.
Yes. She sure did.
Right. I was like, please.
She's brilliant. All right. A couple emails real quick. Vincent wrote in. He's Rilandoon in the Frog Pants Tadpole wrote in, said, greetings, Sackers. After watching Lockout in preparation for this week's sacking, I realized three things. Guy Pearce is an incredibly underappreciated actor and needs to be in more films, namely all of them. Lenny James, rather, and I mean this in the least offensive way possible, is the greatest token black character of all time. Walking Dead proved it. Lockout enforces it. Peter Stormare, for a guy born in Sweden, can't possibly sound more Russian even when trying to sound American. Was he trying to? I felt like he was just being who he is.
He was trying to sound American.
Did he? I couldn't
tell. Yeah.
Well, that might have been part of his character. You know, he was in the government. He's really a Russian agent. You know, he's trying to sound American, doing a horrible job at it.
He's your friend back there in the chipper then. Right.
Right.
Lockout is one of the most fun films you find folks have sacked to date. I had a blast watching it. I cannot wait to hear you sack it. Cheers, gents. All right, Vincent, we'd like to hear what you think of our sacking of the film, which we just talked about. Let us know. Did we appreciate it in the ways you'd like us to? Did we not like the things you didn't like? Where did we land? And there was a lot of division on Twitter. People are like, love it or hate it. There's no in between.
That's funny.
Yeah. You know what? Going in with not expecting a lot, I did enjoy it.
Sure. I think it helps that it's 2012 and it's loud and looked good. That helps movies like this. And you know what? I was really looking forward to it, and probably that's why I bumped it ahead of The Quest in the back of my subconscious, because I think I was in the mood, or I had a need for a film sack that wasn't some ancient moldy piece of shit. Like, I wanted something that just actually was like, all right, we just did this. This just happened. That means visually and auditorially, we're going to get like the best Hollywood has to offer. And I kind of need that right now. But then I saw Iron Man and Star Trek back to back, and maybe I didn't need it anymore. Anyway.
Sorry.
Sabriel says, way back in the Johnny Mnemonic episode, Randy made a comment about how no shows and movies had predicted widescreen television. I agreed with him until very recently. I started to rewatch Sequest DSV on Netflix. We covered that on Autopilot this last season.
Interesting.
And what did I see? Widescreen monitors everywhere. And the show started in 93. I'm not taking Randy to task. I just wanted to share something I discovered. Love the show, though. I remember that prediction.
Right. Yeah. I do. And that's probably a good point. Yeah. That's interesting that they would have that on there. I don't remember widescreens at all back in 93.
I remember the Wesley-like dolphin trainer kid. That's all I remember about DSV.
Yeah.
That's it. And the crusty face of, what's his name?
And Shorty Shorts?
Yeah, Shorty Shorts. Oh, my God. No, see, he actually wore jumpsuits the whole time. That show really did try to be Star Trek.
But he was wearing Shorty Shorts underneath those jumpsuits. You know that, right?
Yeah, always. I thought that's all that guy had underneath. There is no penis. There are no testicles.
He's like a Ken doll.
Right.
All right.
You know the one? Roy Scheider?
Right. Shorty shorts?
I don't know how he reproduces. Okay. So let's talk about next week's film. It's going to be The Quest. We are doing The Quest next. This is Jean-Claude Van Damme and Roger Moore doing their thing. Randy said before the show, or maybe you said during the show, it is the mother of all tournament fighting movies.
It is the repeat of all Tournament of Champions movies.
Okay. So you got, I mean, is there... Like, what's the one with Van Damme? One of his blood sporty kind of thing, or
you got that? You got the, sport. You got all the Don the Dragon Wilson movies. Mm-hmm. All the, who's the other guy? There's all the Chuck Norris, not military movies.
Oh, right, the ones that weren't Delta Force.
Walker Ranger.
Trucker, what? What'd you say? You say trucker? Was there trucker
Walker
in there?
Ranger.
Oh, okay.
Walker Ranger.
Yeah. Somebody the other day said.
And the bear?
I got an email that said this. It was the most. It just reminded me because you said, I thought you said trucker. He goes, you guys, I love Film Sack. I've listened to it from the beginning. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. But I'm telling you right now, you will not be complete. And it was this kind of beseechery. Like, he was really wanting us to do a thing. And I'm reading along and he says, you have to watch Convoy cover it on the show.
My time with
Film Sack will not be complete until you guys watch Convoy. And I said, We've seen Convoy.
Right. We got a great big old Convoy.
I mean, where did Brian's? He got $50. Like, yeah. We wouldn't have any of these things.
Right. Right.
Without Convoy. So we've done Convoy. Go back.
Been there. Yeah, been there.
It was good.
Yeah, we had a good time. I remember that being one of our highlights. So, Convoy.
By the way, if you haven't gone back and listened to it yet, the Adventures of Ford Fairlane episode was a high point.
I agree. And who would have known?
Much more so than the movie.
If you're just joining FilmSack for the first time and you're thinking, I want to go back and listen to some episodes, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's where to start. It's our little primer for how to get used to our show. All right, that's it. Next week, The Quest. Stay tuned for that. In the meantime, you can visit us at filmsack.com, email us at filmsack@gmail.com, find us on Twitter at FilmSack. Leave us reviews on iTunes. We've picked the Nerdtacular film. We'll tell you what that is next week. I've kind of already said on Twitter, so many of you already know, but we'll talk about it next week. It might be Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. That might be what it is. We'll let you know when we confirm it next week on the show. Very much looking forward to that in July. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Oh, well, that's me.
We'll see you next time.
You're all mouth and no trousers.
I have trousers.
Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Yeah!